Chapter 15. Santa Fe, New Mexico. The city's name, as Morgan points out from his guidebook, actually means holy faith. But after Democracy, Kansas, nobody's putting too much faith in names anymore. Early September is pretty much the best time of the year to be in Santa Fe. Cooler than the desert heat of August, the aspens of the Santa de Cristo Mountains turning bright yellow. They're all having dinner in a funky little Mexican cantina, Claude's farewell meal, and spirits are high because, as Chris points out, they are now only 800 miles from L.A. Get there easy, with a day to spare. Claude keeps borrowing Chris's cell to call and check if his cousin's home yet, but no answer. The place is cheap, the fish tacos are good, and Jesus and Morgan lean happily on the bar, getting another round of beers in, a few more tequilas. JC and Morgs clink their little shot glasses together and toss that burning spirit back.
Yeah,
Morgan says, reaching for a lemon. Hey, look at them, Jesus says fondly, gazing across the restaurant in a tequila haze to where their party sits under a big ornamental cactus plant. Big Bob is pulling his canvas jacket up over his face, just his eyes peeking out as he makes monster faces and chases Miles and Danny around the table, the boys shrieking with delight. Pete is talking to Chris and Becky. Claude is heading outside again, dialing once more on Chris's cell. Been quite a few thousand miles, huh? Jesus says.
Sure has, Morgan says.
Listen, Morgs, you notice anything about Claude?
Like what?
Kid seems distracted, like,
well, probably nervous about being in a new town, you know? Meeting his cousin, trying to get work and all that.
Shit, Morgan says.
He's just a kid. He's not much on conversation.
Shh, heads up. JC says, spotting Claude approaching them.
Nah, I reckon it sounds better in F-sharp, he says.
That was my cousin. He's back home now.
Great, Morgan says.
Look, JC says, I don't feel right about this, Claude. Having you turn up and ask your family for money straight off the bat just so you can give it to us? I reckon we can at least get to Phoenix with what we've got, and then...
It's no problem, Claude says. You folks been real good to me. I'll be about an hour or so, I guess.
If you're sure, man.
He nods.
See you soon then, kid, Morgan says.
Claude checks the big old grid of buzzers and doorbells. The old Spanish-style adobe building has been subdivided many times over the years, apartments multiplying, splintering like cells in a living, growing organism. And it takes him a moment before he finds the name he's looking for. It's handwritten under a clear piece of yellowing scotch tape, writing he recognizes immediately, although he hasn't seen it in many years. Apartment 215. He retreats to the shadows near the door of the apartment building and waits. 5 minutes, 10, until he sees the door opening, and he hurries on up the steps, looking purposeful as a middle-aged Hispanic woman comes out. It doesn't look like the kind of place where people ask too many questions, and sure enough, she leaves the door swinging open for him to enter. Up the stairs to the second floor, apartment 209 on his left, reaching into his already open knapsack, passing 211, his hand curling around the checkered wood grip, apartment 213, sliding the safety off with his thumb, his hand still deep in the bag outside 215, his breathing short, swallowing as he knocks on the door quickly, not giving himself time to think this through anymore. A moment passes, there's the sound of glass breaking, a bottle being knocked over, and then suddenly the door is being flung open and a middle-aged man stands there, balding, a big gut hanging over the waistband of stained gray sweatpants, a grubby white vest above that. The man's face is unshaven, and he's red-eyed, half in the bag,
just as Claude hoped.
Yeah,
the man says in a Kentucky accent, surly, irritated, just the way Claude remembered. For a moment, Claude can't speak. He just looks at him.
Look, what the fuck do you want, kid?
The man begins, glancing behind Claude and along the corridor, a flash of worry that something's up, that Claude, whoever he is not alone. But he doesn't finish the sentence. Claude whips the .45 out of his knapsack and smashes it hard into the guy's face, and he falls backwards, his nose breaking, blood spraying out of his nostrils as Claude steps quickly into the apartment and pulls the door shut behind him.
Been a while, huh?
Claude says, pointing the gun at the sprawling, bleeding figure on the carpet.